there was another time too. We did this, and then there was an occasion where we couldn't. We got caught by the battalion commanders that the Marines were doing it. They were wondering where they're getting this meat from, and they said, "Well, we've been trading off souvenirs for meat with the army unit." And he said, "No, sir." And then we spotted a horse. "Say, there's a horse over there. Looks like a young colt." And then we shot this horse. And we crawled over there in the ravine. We skinned it out. And then we told some of our white brothers, they said, "Hey, we got some meat over there." "What kind of meat?" "Real good meat. Fresh meat too. Yeah, we'll invite you. Come on." We had built a fire. This was in the afternoon. At night, you are not allowed to show any light at all. So while this fire was going, there'd be a lone Japanese plane coming by. Spotters, they call them. And the man's name was Mr. Ben Arviso. And all these act position 20 millimeters and so on, the Marines had out in the field. Says, there's a boogie over there coming right straight at us. And he would yell to these guys in there, "Whoa, there's a boogie over there, zero such and such a place, you know." He said, "No, don't shoot that way," because they had traces. You could see those traces at night as well as in the daytime. So they say, "You're shooting the wrong way. What in the devil's the matter with you guys anyway? Over here, he'd be standing, you know." And that Japanese plane, they saw where the fire was. And I guess, but nevertheless, they tried to strafe us, but yet we were already done gone. There's nobody around the fire. Gone. We got out, got the meat out, and put it on that hot coal. And then these guys, "Hey, Chief, where you got there? Some fresh meat. Where'd you get it?" "Over here, over the hill. The doggies are over there. They're begging for souvenirs. No food. What is that?" They tell us that that's beef. They couldn't tell. They're so hungry. They're willing to eat anything. So they said, we told them that's beef. They couldn't tell by looking at whether that was beef or horse meat. But he has one real tender young colt. We just look at each other, and we roasted it and got some salted it. Come on. Boy, finally after a while, one of these fellas already knew. We told him, we showed him the skin. He said, "That's a horse." Then finally he got, oh boy, Chief. A pretty good horse, isn't it? And he's a horse. Yeah. Do you know, buddy, that you just now got through filling up with the horse meat? "Oh no, Chief." "Yeah, how was it?" And they all admit, pretty good horse. These are just some of the things, you know.
Mark. And you call the army men doggies? Is that what you call them?
Yes, we call them doggies. Yes. Yeah, it's just that slang, you know.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So those doggies over the hill, we gave them some flags, and they, in return, we got some fresh meat. What kind of meat is that? That's beef. That's beef. They couldn't tell it was beef or whatever it was. As long as it was meat, well, they were so hungry enough they eat anything.
Now, when you were, after you were teaching as an instructor there, what was the first place where you went into combat?
Well, the 1st Marine Division was relieved from Guadalcanal, and they were regrouping and being reinforced. Some of the units were down in Wellington, New Zealand. Some went there, and then some of the bulk of the division was then recuperating and reinforced it, and they were located in Melbourne, Australia, where we joined at them.
You joined them at Melbourne?
Yes, in Australia.
That was your first action? The first place you went was Australia?
Yes, and then from there, after the First Marine Division was reinforced with replacement of all the casualties and so forth, then our first was New Guinea. We call it Cape Gloucester.
Yes.
And on our way, in funny thing, we heard, see, the buzzer rang, ding, 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 ding. Now hear this, now hear this. This is the commander of all the Marine forces in the South Pacific from Cinco Pac. That means commander-in-chief, Fleet Marine Force. And then Admiral Nimitz came over. I guess this was already on tape. And they said, the eyes and ears of the world is upon you. What you do and the success of this operation depends on you men. He said, good luck, may God bless you. Ready to hit the shore. Some certain ones went to mass, the last mass that they probably ever went to. Mm-hmm. Some of my white brothers had gone on. I hear them kneeling down before a chaplain, and they ask their maker, which is the same God that you and I all pray to. They say, dear Heavenly Father, if my turn is up, if that bullet has my number, my name on it, please, I don't want it in any place else but between my eyes, where it won't hurt. Make it quick. Call me home. Repossess me. They cry, shaking like that, and just cry. Unashamed, uncontrolled tears. Sure enough, something mysteriously must have told them, I used to say. When their time comes, somehow something tells them, I've heard those prayers. Sure enough, some of them have never even reached at the beach. Some of them have never fired a shot. They have never saw an enemy. But yet, they were killed. You'd
that
see them.
First wave.
Yeah. You'd see them like the way you saw that Peleliu battle. Bodies floating. The tide drifting. Washing them ashore. Face down. That's the way it was.
And did, were you at Peleliu?
I was on Peleliu.
Yes. Now, you said on this ship, and where the white brothers went to mass or went to the priest, just where were you landing at that time?
We were our way in 0400, somewhere a little after 4 o'clock in the morning. And our way in they asked that those that want to see the chaplain may go to such and such a place. And they went over there. And then coming back, we were given just the last orders to that woman that always knew where 1st Marine Division was. Her name was Tokyo Rose. She said, First, my dear, we know where you are. You're just about to hit Cape Gloucester. But back home, look at all the 4Fs. They're laying easily, having a good time with your sweethearts at home, with your loved ones that you left at home. People are having such great time in the city of Los Angeles, Denver, Colorado, New York City, Kansas City. They're praying and they're hoping and they're saying, please, God, let this war go on 4 more years. We're getting rich. We're earning such good money. We're having such a good time. Your very sweethearts, the people that you trust, your wives, they're in bed in the state of such and such a place. Think about that, First Marine. Think about that, Marine. You are just about to hit the beach. Yeah, Tokyo Rose told us that.
I knew.
On our way in. And how she got the message, nobody ever knew. That is one thing I wanted to tell you. And then when we went in, well, it was just barely daylight when we hit Cape Gloucester. And it was the time of the year when the monsoon, slow drizzling rain. It was warm. You could lay there and just rain, wet from the tip of your toes to the top of your head. And we lost some of our co-talkers there. Some of the best ones were my men. We didn't do like what you've seen up there on the hill. Part of the time, we were runners. When some of these runners were knocked out, were killed, too many casualties like on Peleliu. That's the one place where within 2 hours, there's more than 2,000 casualties.
Now, where was this?
Peleliu.
Peleliu and Tarawa must have been two of the worst.
I remember Peleliu so clearly because that's where I suffered the most with my men. We were machine gunners. We were BAR men. We had to lug machine guns. We had to lug Browning automatic rifles. We were infantrymen. We were stretcher bearers. Why? Because they didn't have anyone to do it. And
that's
you talk about code talkers. Yes, code talker is a machine gunner. He's a BAR man.
What does BAR mean?
That means Browning automatic rifleman.
Yeah.
They're heavier and they're bigger. They're more. They pack more power, and it's heavier to carry. But we lugged them. We lugged the flamethrowers. I lugged the flamethrower on my own back, but yet I'm supposed to be a signalman, the chief at the message center. But yet, when the call came, you had to obey orders. Whether it was right or wrong, you did it exactly like the way you were told, just like an example that I had given, the Japanese, the suicide men, they dived it in there whether it was right or wrong. They had a mind of their own? No. They had a mind, but that wasn't it. You did the way your commander, just like Hitler, Eli Kors. They did it exactly the way that they were ordered. There was no question asked. And that's the way we did it on Peleliu.
Now, Peleliu wasn't the first place you landed, was it?
No.
Cape Gloucester was the first place.
But going to different operations, we learned it by previous experiences.
Yes.
At first, you're all curiosity. You want to see, you want to shoot. But the second time, learning from your experience, you're a little careful, you're a little hesitant. The third time you go in, like in my case, Peleliu, well, you don't know whether you want to go through with it or not. The fourth time, like on Okinawa, no, you don't care no more. Life don't mean anything to you no more. You've been in there too long. You say, well, if I'm going to get it, I'm getting it. If my turn was up, I should have been gone long ago. What does it matter now? It don't matter anymore now. You're not curious anymore. You're not hesitant anymore. You're not sure anymore. One way or another, you just don't care anymore. You're too Asiatic, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
You're experienced it to the point where you're almost immune to feeling. It gets you to the point where life hardly don't mean anything anymore. You don't care whether you ever get back to the stateside to a certain degree. And then you don't care for yourself no more.
Now when you were in these very difficult situations, did you find that you were called on to be a co-talker and you found it was effective?
Now for instance, when this Japanese went across the trench, weren't you giving a message about that time? According to the story that Phil told me, I thought you were giving a message and had a mic in your hand. Or was that another time?
Well, there's been two or three times like that, but the one that I was telling him, yes, we were translating the message. And he knew where to run. He knew where to go. Because we were sending message.
He was
heard.
Trying to get to the message.
Yes.
And he got your buddy instead of you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you just went right on with the message.
Yes. And there were times on Okinawa when the Japanese used to blow horns into the mic.
Mm-hmm.
they got on a frequency like McCabe said.
Yes.
And they beat tin cans and just like that, you know. And I just tell them, don't mind the son of a bitches. Tell them to go to hell and just take this following message. Message begins here. And every unit where we had our men, this is to all units. And this has priority number one. It has to go to every unit. Not 5 minutes from now, but now. I want to get a Roger from each unit. Now. You might think that, Jimmy King must have been a slave driver. But yet, when you're out there,
you have to do it.
You had to do it against your own, you might say, your way of thinking.
You
but
had
yet,
to do some of those noises then. You had the noises while you were sending the message.
Yes.
On your own lines.
That's right.
And just tell the men not to pay any attention to the noise and listen to the message.
That's right.
But they were able to sort the sounds for the message from the noises.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Some of them, I heard them cussing, even though the general rule is there is no cuss word. But the next closest we can say cuss words is the devil. May you go to the land of the devil. That means idi kahodinna. May you go the way of the cursed to the land of the devil with no return.
Mm-hmm.
I heard them, some of them saying. Yeah. So these are some of the things that's never been known. But yet, to me, right now, even though some of these men that we had reunion with and are attending this reunion, the feelings that they had there will never be known. They'll never be spoken because, I tell you, I understand it this way, that the quiet, unspoken feeling that gets to be among men are the only ones that can understand it is the man that's been suing.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
And the quiet, unspoken things that get to be among them is something that you can say that the hardest thing that you can understand or ever try to understand is your feeling, the feeling that you try to put into words. I know, I feel certain ways when I recall those moments. But yet, my feeling, I can't put it into words.
It's almost just a like sacred feeling, isn't it?
Yes. But yet, just like this last message, here is the last message that we demonstrated here. We know that we'd like to keep this as a matter of permanent record of how the Navajos have demonstrated the message. And we'd like to keep that one there.
It's a beautiful message.
So that's it. Regardless of the changing of times, it might be a famine, it might be droughts, it might be earthquake, it might be flood, it might be some kind of academic, something that will spread all over through the United States and take away thousands of lives, regardless of time. May the Navajo Nation endure this of all time. In God we trust.
Mr. King, I think I'll have to let you go.
There has been some resentment and frustration that has been felt and experienced by some of our co-talkers. Some of them say, look what we did. Look what we have contributed to the final victory for our country. But yet, this very ungrateful nation does not see fit to take in the consideration that the billions of dollars that's been sent and been spent in the way of an appeasement to our former enemies could very well be spent for the improvement in our own backyard on the Navajo Reservation. Why do you spend it over there? And even asking the very men that were that were supposedly to be totally extinguished, including their white brothers. You're going back to these same people and say you must contribute in the way of taxes so we can support these people across the pond. They're starving. I wish that the American government would understand they were the same people that tried to extinguish us. Mm-hmm. And look what we did. Can't you understand? What's the matter? What's this world going to? But nevertheless, they say, if we must, if we have to do it again, we will. But not needlessly. We love this country. We love our white brothers and sisters to the point where we pray for them. We ask God in a white man's way. We ask the Great Spirit in Indian way and say, forgive them, gracious Father. They did and they do not know what they did and are doing. Forgive them, dear gracious Father. Bless them according to their individual needs. Some of them are making fun of us. Some of them, they ridicule us. They say we're backward. No, Father, forgive them. Bless them. We're asking you in a pitiful way to bless each one of them. Bless the President of the United States of America. Bless the people that are representing us in Washington. Bless the people that their feeling and their thoughts are unspoken and unread through the press and books and the Times. Bless all these good people. Bless the United States of America. This is our last request. Bless us humbly, dear gracious Father. This is what we pray. We ask the Great Spirit that way. And with this thought, parting shot, there is no feeling of animosity. Even though they say, yes, look what you stupid Indians. Look at the Trail of Tears from here to Fort Sumter. Look what they did to you. Look what they did to you at Fort Wounded Knee. Mm-hmm. Yes. But yet, we say, forgive them, dear gracious Father. With this, I want to leave it the way I've said it, leave it up to you, that we are a humble people.
You're a beautiful people.
Thank you.
We have learned a lot.
You see, we we visited Wenderon, and we were well with the Navajo people, and that's the reason we have spent over between $2,000 and $3,000 getting ready to publish this book.
Mm-hmm. I want it right.
You see, we want it just
absolutely
right.
Accurate.
We don't know whether, we're not wealthy people, we don't know whether the book will ever make any
money,
the money back or not. But we
that doesn't make any
contribution
difference.
Of our profits.
Yes. There's a lady too. She calls me my. She was the only brother I had, and she has written a lot of this. Their names are Mama Day, mm-hmm. and Indian. 2 years ago, was selected the American Indian of the Year, delivered at Taos, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have to give you back to Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, we will fight our country's battle on the land and on the sea. First to fight for right and freedom and to keep our honor free. We are proud to claim the title of United States Marine.
With that, we'd like to ask the head table, followed by the table on your left, to swing around. It'll be a buffet. Go through the line and see if we can't get it kind of in a more or less circular motion so we can all chow down. Judge, I'll let you lead off. He teases me about eating as much as Yogi Bear down at the zoo. Well, it took him a couple of years to get even. But. First of all, I hope all of you have worked out the little code in the program. It starts out with weasel, and it ends up with saying, welcome Navajo, or welcome Marines, rather. And I understand that once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine, so whether it's past, present, or I see some future Marines here, the salutation is appropriate. I would like to, first of all, take this opportunity to introduce some guests and some people that, at least for the benefit of the families and other people that have just come in this evening, to get acquainted with some of the other non-code talkers who have been attending this session and in one capacity or another. And I think first and foremost, I'd like to ask him to stand up and be recognized. And let's give a good hand to an 81-year-old young man, Mr. former Staff Sergeant Philip Johnston. I'm not going to let him sing any songs, though. He claims he's only 78. He showed me his discharge paper the other day that said he was born in 1892. So maybe that is 78. I would also like to take this opportunity to introduce a man who has thoroughly fallen in love with this country. His first trip out, and he's already well equipped with boots and a good old wide cowboy belt and hats and pants and trousers. He's really going to go back on that plane tomorrow looking like a Westerner. And he has a mustache and a beard to go along with it. And I think we've all had a lot of fun having him here. We hope that he'll come back again. Mr. Venus Frank with the Oral History Department of the Marine Corps. Where's your boots? Also, in conjunction with a lot of the taping that was going on the last 2 days, a crew under the direction and in of Dr. Gregory Crampton, who is director of the Western History Center and also in association with the University of Utah at Salt Lake City. Dr. Crampton? Also running around with the tape recorder, I found her at the between beers up at the cookout the other night, and she was out in the zoo one afternoon and one morning. She seemed to find these code talkers, they just couldn't hide. And the more they tried, the more she found them. And I think she's got some good material for a forthcoming historical book on the Navajo code talkers. This is Doris Paul from East Lansing, Michigan. And in conjunction with that book, she wrote me a note that on our display table today, we had one of many photographs. This was an official Marine Corps photo, which showed the white crosses of a cemetery with the placing of the flag on Iwo Jima above them. Is the owner of that photograph here this evening? And if so, could he raise his hand and we might... There he is. George Sosie. Go get him. I would also like to extend a vote of thanks and appreciation to the local Navajo newspaper, the Navajo Times, which has been carrying information about the Code Talkers reunion for the last 6 weeks. And as you know, Thursday's paper came out pretty well saturated with the Code Talkers, even to the point where an entire supplement was dedicated to you people. And the editor in the back, Chet McRoy, I'd like to have him stand and be recognized for an outstanding job with the Navajo Times. Someone who is not able to be here with us for most of the reunion, but I'm sure all of you veterans, whether you're Marines or any other branch of the service, have benefited from her very vigorous interest in the affairs of all veterans, and primarily our Navajo veterans, made a special effort to get back from Washington this evening so at least she could be here with us at the banquet. And I think we owe a good round of applause to Mrs. Harriet Bach. As long as she keeps that flag flying at the cemetery up there at Fort Defiance, I think we know we have a friend that is, again, very concerned and very interested in veterans' affairs. But I'd also like to extend an appreciation and a vote of thanks to my cohort in putting this thing together, Mr. Ted Evans, the new director of the Navajo Veterans Affairs Administration. It's a good long title, and he's going to find that it's going to have a lot of work connected with it. And I think he's really the man for the job. His whole heart and soul is in this work. And let's ask Ted to be recognized too. Ted. At least we know we have at least one frustrated Code Talker. If it wasn't for our football accident, he'd been sitting out there with you. Another gentleman who has had extreme interest in the welfare of the Code Talkers in the past several years and who continues to have this interest, acknowledging it with his own, a lot of times at his own personal expense by traveling out to Window Rock on several occasions from Chicago. And we have, in conjunction with this introduction, a follow-up on some of the presentations. Let's give another round of applause to Lee Cannon with the 4th Marine Division. Now this afternoon, we had a presentation of medallions to the Code Talkers who successfully passed their entrance exams up on, what they call it, Sea Ration Hill. We've got a new name for that. A new name for the hill behind the museum, and I think it'll go down in history as Sea Ration Hill. But those Code Talkers up on that hill who passed their tests with flying colors, and we see their medallions. And unfortunately, we're not joined by the rest of you who apparently couldn't make it for the afternoon program. We would like now any Code Talkers who have not received the medallion, if they could please stand up at this time, and we'd like to make the presentations. Okay. Maybe if you just came up up in the front here and Harry too. We'd like you to maybe face the audience, I think.
teachers, they've come home. They've been outstanding citizens in this community. We're mighty proud of these Marines, and we're going to keep in closer touch with them from now on. And I want to congratulate every one of you.
That reported to San Diego in, was it March? In May of 1942. If those of you who were in that original platoon, could you also please come up, step up forward, and we'd like to get a group shot of you.